Good day. My name is Tracy, and I will be your event specialist today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the web conference for AEP Ohio CBP Spring 2015 Auction. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise, and please note that today's web conference is being recorded. You can ask text questions throughout the presentation, locate the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen, and select all panelists in the Send To box. Type in your question and click Send to submit your question. We will address questions at the end of the presentation as time permits. If you experience any technical difficulties during today's event, please press star 0 on your telephone keypad to be connected with an operator. You can also use the chat panel to communicate any issue directly to me. At this time, I would like to turn today's program over to Benjamin Chi from NERA. You may begin, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I want to welcome everyone to today's webcast. This webcast is for the first as well as the second auctions under AEP Ohio's ESP number 3. Today, presenting with me is also Dr. Chantal Lacasse from NERA. NERA is the auction manager managing this process on behalf of AEP Ohio. With us today is also some representatives from AEP Ohio who will assist in answering any subject matter expertise questions that may require your assistance. We will start today's program with one disclaimer. So this is a disclaimer. Any statements herein describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only, and they are qualified in their entirety by my reference to such governing documents. These auctions are conducted pursuant to a commission-approved process, and the governing documents include some of the documents that are filed in the proceeding, including first the, and importantly, the commission decision in case number 13-2385-ELSSO related to this ESP number 3. It also includes the bidding rules for the auctions under the CBP for Ohio Power Company. This is known as the CBP rules, CBP for the competitive bidding process. It will include the standard contract that is used for this process. Standard contract is known as the Master Standard Service Offer Supply Agreement. Other documents will include the rules and protocols for participation by associated bidders, as well as the requirements that are specified in the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. And for this, you can find all the governing documents, including those that I have just alluded to here on this slide, on our RFP website or our auction website. And the website address is www.aepohiocbp.com. Throughout the rest of this presentation, I'm going to use a couple of these short names that you find here. So just take note, I will mention some of them here for you. ESP for the Electric Security Plan, and in particular for these auctions related to this webcast will be under ESP number 3. The CBP for the Competitive Bidding Process, SSO for the Standard Service Offer. Again, the website address is aepohiocbp.com. This is a central source of information for bidders. I'm going to highlight a couple of things on this screenshot that we have taken here for you. So if you have not already done so, you should go to the Contact Us link on the website. The first thing, perhaps a very important thing to do, is to register yourself on the website to receive or continue to receive these announcements and email alerts related to the auction process. And you can find that link under Contact Us and the sublink Register. The second link that I want to highlight for you is that there is a FAQ process in place where bidders and interested parties can ask questions to the auction manager. And you can do so by clicking again on the Contact Us link, and the sublink is Ask a Question, as you can see on the left navigation bar. And certainly all questions and answers, including any questions and responses that we provide on this webcast, will be posted as FAQs on the FAQ side of the auction website as well. And the third link that I want to highlight for you here from the start is the Register for an Application Account link. You are expected to submit your applications online. The first step to the process is to register for an online application account, and you can find that again on the Contact Us link, and the sublink is Register for an Application Account. So the website is managed by NERA. NERA, again, is the independent auction manager on behalf of AEP Ohio. We are the main point of contact and the interface between bidders. And we ask that if you have any questions or concerns, that you will contact the auction manager related to this process. Do not contact AEP Ohio representatives directly. Do not contact the commission staff directly. This will ensure that NERA will be able to do our job as the independent auction manager, that we will provide information fairly and adequately and equitably to all bidders. It will ensure that the CBP rules will be followed and that bidder qualifications are treated fairly. NERA will administer the conduct of the auction and present the results to the commission. Today's agenda has five parts. First, we'll cover in the first two sections an overview of the process, the product, as well as very high level the key terms of the contract and credit provisions. And then we will turn to the latter part of this webcast to the practical aspects of how you participate in the application process, how you submit a bid, what the requirements are, and where you can find information on our CBP website. One housekeeping item here on slide 5, as we have mentioned earlier, we will take questions throughout this presentation, but we will stop at two specific points during this webcast to pause and respond to some of these questions. So the first point where we will stop is after part 2, after we have talked about the product design and the contract terms. That's the first point we will stop. And the second point we'll stop is at the end of the presentation. Questions in this webcast will be taken in writing through the WebEx interface. The way that you will do that is to locate the Q&A on the right side of your screen. You have to select all panelists in the Ask box, as you can see on the screenshot that is provided. And then you type in your question, and then you hit send and submit your question to us. We do ask that if you have questions specific to a slide, that you would reference the slide number as well. These instructions will be provided again when we are at these two stopping points. So we'll start the overview section for the convenience of returning bidders, bidders who have been with us in ESP 2, to talk at a very high level as we start this process for ESP number 3, what the big differences are. So we'll start with the similarities. First, the ESP 3 process, again, is a commission-approved process. The order was issued on February 25th of this year. This is going to be a load-following slice-of-system product. Slice-of-system load-following is a feature of ESP 2 as well, and with that, you're not providing a fixed megawatt amount, but rather the supply that we are after will be divided into tranches. And if you're a winner for a tranche, you'll be responsible for a percent of the load of SSO customers. SSO customers are generally known as non-shopping customers. To be more precise, these are retail customers, customers who take retail generation service from AEP Ohio. Now, the differences between ESP2 and ESP3, to be very clear, this process is under ESP number 3, what you see on the right side of your screen. So instead of energy-only product, now we are looking for a load-following full requirements service. There's going to be a different contract that is used between ESP2 and ESP3. In ESP3, the contract is known as the Master SSO Supply Agreement. The delivery point is different. This is now going to be an AEP Ohio load zone. The P-Node ID is provided here for your reference. It's also provided in the master SSO supply agreement as well. And unlike ESP2, where the supplier is not a LSE, ESP3, the SSO supplier will assume LSE responsibility. This will include scheduling SSO supply and making arrangements for delivery of SSO supply. So here we are on slide 8. Again, this product is a load following full requirements product. And so by load following, what we mean again is that you have to follow a percent of the load that is associated with the tranches that you will win. So on this slide 8, we provide the delivery period as well as the percent of load by each option. This is a multi solicitation process in which there is a total of 6 auctions to be held under ESP number 3. The first 2 auctions, one will be held in late April and a second auction will be held in May, will procure collectively 100% of load. And then subsequent auctions 3 and 4 will be to replace some of the contracts that will expire, as well as 5 and 6 will be for a 1-year term that will replace remaining obligations under ESP number 3. For each of the first 2 auctions for which this webcast is about, we will procure again 100% of load and procure for 3 different product terms, for a 1-year term, for a 2-year term, and a 3-year term, with supply starting June 1st of this year, 2015. So to accommodate having 2 auctions close together in April and in May, and the auction start date again, I will mention here, and we'll circle back again later in this presentation, is April 28 and May 12. And to accommodate having 2 auctions close together, we'll have a single application process for the first 2 auctions as required under the commission order. So the first 2 auctions will be held close together. There's going to be 1 single application process, and this is going to be a 2-part application process. This is an application process to submit so that you can submit bids for the first auction or for the second auction or for both auctions. You need to participate in this application process. The Part 1 date is when the Part 1 application is due to us. This is when an interested party will apply to become a qualified bidder. The Part 2 application process is for qualified bidders to make a number of certifications, to submit indicative offers, and to post pre-bid security to become a registered bidder, register for the auction. The Part 2 date is on April 15. Between the first auction and the second auction, there will be an opportunity for bidders who have been registered pursuant to a successful Part 2 application process to update or refresh your indicative offers, as well as provide amended pre-bid letters of credit that will support your updated indicative offers. Any additional procedures necessary to administer this single application process for purposes of having these 2 auctions close together will be provided in an addendum to the CBP rules. Over on slide 10 here, this process, as the heading has said, the title here says, is an auction that features a descending clock auction format. And under a descending clock auction, the auction will proceed in multiple rounds. What is different here between ESP3 and what we have used in ESP2 is that under ESP3, there will be multiple products that are featured. A product, again, is for a slice of system of SSO load for a given supply period. So under ESP2, bidders are used to a single product descending clock auction. Under DSP3, we have at least 3 products in the first auction as well as the second auction. Each round, suppliers will state how many tranches you want to supply at a product at the going price that is announced by the auction manager. So you do not name your price, but the auction manager will name a price, a going price for that round, and suppliers will state how many tranches you want to supply for a given product at the going price for that product. From one round to the next, the auction will continue and the price for the product will tick down if the product has excess supply. And because this auction process features multiple products, again, there's going to be a product for a one-year term, a second product for a two-year term, and a third product for a three-year term, there is going to be switching between the products that is allowed. The auction will conclude only when there is no longer a price tick down in all of the products. And at that point, the auction will establish a single clearing price for each product separately. And because not all the descending clock auction formats work the same, I just want to highlight one feature here for bidders, which is that in this auction format, we will not feature a sealed bid round. Again, there will be no sealed bid round. As bidders withdraw the tranches in the auction, you'll be asked to provide an exit price as you withdraw the tranches throughout the auction. And just to be very clear, there's going to be two auctions. The dates are provided here. The auction start date for the first auction is on Tuesday, April 28. For the second auction, will start on Tuesday, May 12. Again, there will be three products. These are all full requirements load following product, but for different contract durations. And for each of these two auctions, we're going to procure 50% of SSO load separately. So for the first auction, for the 12-month product, we're going to look for 17 tranches, and each tranche corresponds to 1% of the tranches of the product. Similarly, for the 24-month product, we're looking for a total of 17 tranches, and for the 36-month product, we're looking for a total of 16 tranches, which will result in 50 total tranches for the first auction, and we'll redo this again for the second auction for a collective 100% of SSO load to be auctioned off through these two auctions. We have a couple of announcements in the next two slides. The minimum and maximum starting price, this is the range in which the start of the auction, the round one price, will begin. So the minimum starting price is $70 per megawatt hour, and the maximum starting price will be $95 per megawatt hour. And again, this round one price for the auctions will start somewhere in between, inclusive of these ranges that I just read to you. And the second piece of information that I need to announce here is the megawatt measure. The PLC megawatt is based on 5 CP as experienced by PJM in 2014 for SSO customers, and these are provided here. For each tranche, it is roughly about 29.54 megawatts, and we are providing these numbers for your reference. And of course, because this product is a load-following product, the amount of actual quantity to be delivered will depend on many factors, including migration and changes in demand of SSO customers. The third piece of information that I have to announce here are seasonal billing factors. Under the contract, suppliers are paid the auction clearing price for each megawatt hour of supply during the delivery term times what we call a seasonal billing factor. There are two seasonal billing factors envisioned in the contract, one for summer months and another for non-summer months. At this time, we are looking at the seasonal factors to be the same for summer as well as non-summer months and to be equal to one. And if there are any updates to these numbers, we will announce that later on, closer to the part two date. At this time, these are provided as on a preliminary basis as estimates for suppliers. We are expecting again the seasonal factors to be one for summer months as well as one for non-summer months. We turn now to slide 14 with a calendar of events. This process has begun here. We are on March 23rd, where the part one window opens, as well as where we have the bidder webcast. We have a process in place to accept alternate guarantees for consideration for bidders who cannot use the form of guarantee appended to the SSO, must SSO supply agreement in the normal course of business. And that deadline has passed for submitting these alternate form of guarantee. And starting with the auction dates in mind, the first auction, again, as you will see here, start date for auction number one starts April 28th. For the second auction, it starts on May the 12th. And as I have said, there is going to be an application process that precedes your submission of bids for either as well as both of these auctions. And this is going to be a two-part application process. The part one process, the window starts today, March 23rd, and it will end on the part one date, which is on April 2nd, next Thursday. And for bidders who are qualified pursuant to the successful part one application process, you'll be notified of your status by April the 7th. Part two windows is for qualified bidders to submit your indicative offers, to make certifications, as well as to provide pre-bid security. The window begins on April 8th and it will end on a part two date, which is April 15th. We will notify bidders of your status if you're registered for the auctions on April 21st. There's going to be a trial auction for bidders to participate in all aspects of the bid submission process. That is scheduled for April 22nd at this time. In terms of a couple of key requirements and announcement, as I've mentioned, we have announced the tranche target for this auction. The first two auctions, we have announced tranche size and the megawatt measure, as well as the range of starting prices. We have also announced the seasonal factors at this time, but we will update these seasonal factors closer to the part two date. Once you have participated in the application process, if you're registered to participate in the auctions, between the first auction and the second auction, there will be a time where you will be able to refresh your information in regards to the indicative offers as well as to provide amended pre-bid security to support your updated indicative offers. Round one price for each of these auctions will be announced on April 23rd for the first auction and by May 7th for the second auction. These will be the actual price that the auction will start for round one of the auction. A word here on the application process. As I've mentioned, this is going to be a two-part application process. At a very high level, the biggest takeaway you should have from this is that the entire application process is done online. There will be no hard copies of application materials required of you. Part 1 application again begins March 23rd, ends on April 2nd. And this is where interested parties will submit the Part 1 application to us to be qualified for the auction. You'll provide us a point of contact and company information, as well as fill in inserts that are provided online at this point so that you can fill them out if required, to sign them and then to upload them on the application website. You'll be also required to upload some required supporting documents. The second part of this process is what we call the Part 2 application. It begins April 8th, ends on April 15th. This is where you provide us information about your indicative offers, make certifications, sign them, and then upload your inserts on the application website. Besides the pre-bid letter of credit or cash, the rest of the application materials, again, are really forms that you will sign, fill out, and upload back on the online application portal. And again, a very big takeaway you should note is the box you see right on the right of this slide, which is there's going to be a single application process for your participation in either of the first or the second options, or for both of these options. You must submit to this particular application process to participate and move further along for these two options. For the post-auction process, the auction results are subject to final commission approval. The day that the auction closes, the auction manager will submit a confidential report on the auction results and provide that to the PUCO or the commission here in Ohio. PUCO will then issue a decision within 2 days of the auction close. Just for historical reference, the commission has issued its decision many times in the past within 1 day of the auction close. And certainly if the commission does not act within this two-day review window, then the auction results are deemed accepted. The commission, after the auction has closed and the results have been approved, may publicly release the auction clearing prices as well as the names of winning bidders in the auction. And then the master SSO supply agreement, the standard contract, must be fully executed by winning bidders within 3 days of the end of the commission review period, and must at that point in time fulfill the creditworthiness requirements and vision under the master SSO supply agreement. I'll now move on to flesh out more details regarding the product as well as the contract terms. So here on this slide, I'll talk about the product first. So on slide 18 here, again, this is a load following full requirements product. So unlike in ESP2 where it's only energy only, here suppliers providing a load following full requirements product will assume all responsibility of a load serving entity. Very concretely, as required under the master SSO supply agreement, suppliers must be a member in PJM of good standing. You must be qualified as a market buyer and seller. You must be qualified as an LSE or load serving entity. And you'll be responsible for providing full requirements service to SSO customers, non-shopping customers of AAP Ohio, and you'll bear all costs that are associated with the responsibility as set forth and laid out in the master SSO supply agreement. And I'll just flag here for you that the attachment F of the master SSO supply agreement has a PJM sample invoice that you can reference that will lay out the responsibilities for both the EDC, which is AAP Ohio, versus the SSO supplier. Again, this is attachment F of the master SSO supply agreement. In terms of supplier obligations, so we have moved on, as I said, from energy only to a full requirements product. So as a full requirements product, this slide here, slide 19, will provide some details on what you're responsible for and also importantly what you're not responsible for. So SSO suppliers will provide energy, capacity, ancillary services, as well as certain transmission services and all other service as may be required by PJM as a load serving entity. What AAP Ohio will be responsible for and will provide will be firm transmission service from the delivery point. This is sometimes known as NITS or Network Integration Transmission Service. Firm transmission service is a defined term that can be found in the Master SSO Supply Agreement. AAP Ohio will also be responsible for other FERC-approved non-market-based charges, as well as the renewable resource requirement in Ohio. Over on slide 20 here, we have a slide that speaks to not the full requirements aspect of this product, but the load following aspect of this product. So as I've said, this is a load following product. This is a slice of system product. And this is going to be a load following product for SSO supply, meaning that you have to follow the load of SSO customers. SSO customers, again, are customers that have not switched to a competitive retail electric service supplier or CREST supplier. And because it's a slice of system, this is not going to be by procurement class or a procurement group, but this is going to be a slice of the entire system for SSO load. It will include residential customers, it will include commercial customers, will include industrial customers. And then we'll also highlight for you that it will also include lighting customers, customers that are on AP Ohio's percentage of income payment plan, special contract customers, and any customers in general that are taking retail generation service from AEP Ohio. On this slide, 21 deals with the credit requirements under the Master SSO Supply Agreement. So there is going to be two credit requirements and two unsecured lines of credit. And let me just unpack this a little bit for you. While I say that there are these two requirements, how the process works out is very similar. So I'll talk about how the process works first. So how the process works is AP Ohio will grant to the supplier, the SSO supplier, an unsecured credit line. The unsecured credit line will be based on two things. One, the credit rating, and two, the tangible net worth of the credit support provider, either the bidder itself or the guarantor if one is named. And any exposure under the Master SSO Supply Agreement that is in excess or exceeding the unsecured credit line that is given, that must be met by either a performance assurance letter of credit or or cash. If you are granted a unsecured credit line based on the credit worthiness of a guarantor, then the guarantee, an executed form of guarantee, must be in place for the unsecured line of credit to be effective. The form of guarantee as well as the performance assurance letter of credit are both provided as attachments to the Master SSO Supply Agreement. Now, back to the two requirements that I have stated at the start of this slide. The two requirements are as follows. There's going to be one requirement known as the Independent Credit Requirement, or ICR. The ICR is on a declining scale that will decrease or be reduced throughout the term of the Master SSO Supply Agreement, and you can find that information as an attachment to the Master SSO Supply Agreement. The unsecured credit line that is associated with the ICR is what we call the ICT, or the Independent Credit Threshold. The second type of requirement under the Master SSO Supply Agreement is based on a mark-to-market methodology. The entire methodology is laid out in an attachment in a Master SSO Supply Agreement, and it will basically look at the differences between the prevailing market price on a valuation date and the market price in effect on the day that the auction has closed. The unsecured credit line that is associated with the mark-to-market credit exposure is what we call the credit limit, and that will cover what is known as total exposure amount under the Master SSO Supply Agreement. And with that, we will stop to take questions on the first two parts of this presentation.
And as a reminder, to submit questions to the presenters, please locate the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen and select all panelists in the Send To box. Type in your question and click Send to submit your question. We will now be placed on hold music for a moment while our presenters review any questions. We will return momentarily.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's Chantal Lacasse from NERA. So we just had one question on the first part of the presentation, and the question is related to the PJM capacity performance product. And at this point, we will research the answer and provide both a question and a response on the FAQ page of the website.
So at this point in the presentation, I'm not seeing any other questions come in for the first two parts of this webcast. Feel free to continue to send in your questions to us based on the instructions provided here. But without further ado, I will turn this time to Dr. Chantal Lacasse, who will take us through the rest of this presentation. Dr. Lacasse?
Thank you. So there are two remaining sections in the presentation. The first one is regarding the application process, and the second one is regarding bidding in the auction. So starting from the application process, this is material that was covered briefly in the first part of the presentation. All of the application process is basically online, aside from the submission of the pre-bid letter of credit. And the first step in that application process, for those of you who don't have one already, is to get an application account from us. And there's two ways to do that. One is to click on the link to register for an application account on the website. That's on the left-hand side in the navigation bar, at which point you'll get asked for some contact information, the company name, the name of a contact person, phone numbers, email address. Or alternatively, you can just provide that same information by email to us at aep-cbp@nera.com, and we will provide a account so that you can proceed with the application process. If you are a returning bidder, by which we mean that you submitted application to the application process in the CBP under the ESP2, then you should have gotten by now your login credentials by email from us. If you haven't gotten that already, please let us know and we will remedy that situation right away. Just a couple of words on features given of the application process, given that we are at the start of ESP3. Some of these we've mentioned already, so I'll go quickly. Again, it's a single application process for both of the upcoming auctions, and that means that even if you were only intending, for example, to participate in the second of those auctions, the window to present your qualification is now, whether it's the first, the second, or both auctions. The application process is online, and one feature of that is that there are certain portions of the qualification that require a signature. So, for example, the officer naming a representative that will represent the applicant in the application process. And any one of those forms is provided separately in what's called an insert. And that's basically a separate Word form that you can download, you can fill in, sign, and then scan and upload back to the Part 1 or the Part 2 forms. So that's a bit different from what was done under ESP2, where the auction manager was preparing those pages for signature. This time around, we are providing you with those forms so that you can prepare them yourself. And what that allows you to do is complete the application in one step rather than having to wait for the signature pages from the auction manager. Now, for ESP3, we're starting fresh, so even bidders that participated under ESP2 will be resubmitting the full Part 1 and Part 2 application. However, the modification to the credit documents that were found to be acceptable under ESP2 are carried over from the prior competitive bidding process to this competitive bidding process under ESP3. When you do log in to to the application website, it will look familiar. The look and feel of the form is similar for those of you who participated in the prior CVP to what it was before. So substantially the same as in the prior CVP, but of course there are differences in the requirements that you will see there reflected in the online form. And the other difference is that now there will be inserts, so those separate Word form that you will fill in, sign, scan, and then upload back to the Part 1 and later to the Part 2 form. So talking a little bit about those inserts, you can download them even before you start filling in the application, and they are found on the Part 1 insert tab on the application website. Now, there are 9 inserts for the Part 1, but not all the inserts are required by all bidders. So this is kind of a handy table to let you know the inserts that are required of all bidders. There's only 4 of those: the designation of the applicant's representative by the officer, and the acknowledgement by the representative of his or her responsibilities in the application process and the auction process. More generally, the naming of a legal representative in Ohio, which is the 4th insert, and they're all numbered from A to I, so the P1D as in domino insert. And finally, there are certifications that are required from all bidders that are in the insert P1H. In addition, we'll be sending all the documentation, all the correspondence, always to the representative, but also to other individuals on your bidding team that will be designated by the representative, and those are called nominees. So you're not required to name nominees, but you may designate those nominees using one of those inserts. All of the other inserts where you have special circumstances in blue means that those are generally only required of bidders that are in specific circumstances, bidders that are not PJM load-serving entities at the start of the application process, or that are foreign applicants, or that are relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor, or those that have a bidding agreement that they need to disclose to the auction manager. But if you're not in one of those special circumstances, then those inserts don't apply to you. So when you download them from the website, it's going to be one zip file with all of those inserts, but again, only some of them in all likelihood are going to be applicable to you. So that's the inserts that you will be uploading to the Part 1 form as you go along. Now to talk more generally about the requirement for the Part 1 and the Part 2. So first for Part 1, you will be required to provide some contact information. So what's required is the information about the representative, so the individual who will be representing the applicant in the application process and the auction process more generally, a legal representative in Ohio, who is an individual or a company that agrees to accept service of process on behalf of the applicant. And finally, optionally, you may designate nominees, and they're going to be included in all electronic communications from us to you. The second are PJM requirements, so that's different from the requirements that existed in the competitive bidding process under ESP2. So the bidder is required to be qualified by PJM as a market buyer and market seller pursuant to PJM agreements, and also qualified as a PJM load serving entity. If you cannot fulfill those requirements, then there's an additional certification to be made that you have considered the requirements and that you are able to comply with those requirements by the start of the supply period, and that you will do so. Now, for those of you who do satisfy those requirements, you may provide us with the following documentation in the Part 1 form. either copy of the executed signature pages from the RAA, the Reliability Assurance Agreement, as well as the operating agreement, or you can also provide as documentation for this requirement a letter from PJM that would state that your company, the bidder, is currently a PJM member in good standing, qualified by PJM as a market buyer and market seller pursuant to PJM agreements, and also qualified as a PJM load serving entity. The remainder of the requirement for the Part 1 application consists of a number of certifications, providing financial information for a creditworthiness assessment, and finally, optionally, requesting modification to pre-bid credit instruments. So the certifications, there's a number of them. They're all in one specific insert that you need to complete, sign, scan, and upload back to the Part 1 form. And they include certifications like agreeing to the terms of the master SSO supply agreement, agreeing to the CBP rules, and also keeping information that's related to the auction confidential. The financial information that you are asked to provide include annual and quarterly financial statements, either for yourself or for a guarantor if you're relying on the financial standing of a guarantor, credit ratings for that entity, and there's also additional information that's required for those that are foreign applicants or that rely on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor. All of these documents, so just like the inserts, any document that is required, aside from, as we mentioned before, the executed pre-bid letter credit, can be submitted via upload to the application website. If you do wish to request modification to the pre-bid credit instruments, what you do is to submit a red line of that credit instrument that you can, again, submit via upload to the application website, and those are going to be considered, and any modification that would be accepted for one bidder will be made available to all bidders on an optional basis, and the list of those acceptable modifications are posted to the website for the benefits of all bidders. Now, I've been talking about uploading documents to the Part 1 form, including financial statements, other documents, including inserts. So there's three steps to that. Starting from the form, one is to click on the Choose File button that you will find once an upload is required. Finding the file that you want to upload and clicking Open is the second step. And there's a third step, which is going back to the application page to click the green Upload button. When the upload is an insert, you will find on the Part 1 form indicated which insert is required, and you will have both the name of the insert, but you also have the number of the insert. And again, the inserts for the Part 1 are numbered from P1-A through I for all of the inserts, and therefore you can, in the space provided, upload those inserts that are applicable to you. So that's the overview of Part 1. For those of you that are successful in the Part 1 application process, you will then become qualified bidders. And as a qualified bidder, you are invited to submit the Part 2 application to be registered as a bidder. And that includes mainly submitting an indicative offer, pre-bid security as a financial guarantee to support that indicative offer, making various certifications, including those that are required for compliance with association rules and the handling of confidential information related to the auction. And there's also additional certification to be made at the Part 2 stage. So the indicative offer is a number of tranches at the minimum starting price and the maximum starting price. And it should represent the maximum number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid at those two prices. Now, it's one number, and as was mentioned in the first part of the presentation, there are three different products corresponding to three different supply periods in this auction. So it's a number across all of those products. Now, the reason we say that the indicative offer should represent the maximum number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid is that that indicative at the maximum starting price is going to determine the maximum number of tranches that a bidder can bid in the auction, namely the initial eligibility. In other words, that number, the indicative offer at the maximum starting price, that number of tranches is going to be the maximum number of tranches that you can bid in round one. And from round one, you will never be able to increase the number of tranches that you bid in total across all products. And therefore, that indicative offer, the maximum starting price, determines the maximum number of tranches that you can bid in the auction overall. It also is going to determine the amount of pre-bid security that's required with the Part 2 application. So, a reminder that bidders are subject to low caps. Two kinds of low caps. One, on an auction-specific basis, a bidder cannot bid or win more than 80% of the number of tranches that are available at the start of the auction. That's one. Two, there's also a credit-based tranche cap that are determined on the basis of the credit rating, and that's an overall cap across all the auction under the CBP, and that credit-based tranche cap is provided to you here with the various credit ratings applicable to either the bidder or to the guarantor upon whose financial standing the bidder is relying. So in terms of pre-bid security, the one thing that is not submitted online is the executed letter of credit if you're submitting pre-bid security that way, or you can submit cash as well. And that will be in an amount of $500,000 per tranche of the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. So it's proportional to your indicative offer at the maximum starting price. There can be additional pre-bid security that will be required, and we will advise you of that in the Part 1 notification that will be provided to you the day before the Part 2 window opens. So, for example, if you are relying on the financial standing of the guarantor, we will note for you that you will be required to provide a letter of intent to provide a guarantee. There's also a number of certifications. Some are to comply with the association and confidential information rules that are provided in Article 10 of the CBP rules. So, for example, you will be asked to certify that you're not associated with another qualified bidder, and that's done to promote the competitiveness of the auction. If for some of those certification you cannot make the certification, then you are asked to state all reasons and provide an explanation for not being able to certify, to so certify. There's also a number of certifications that go to preserving the confidentiality of the auction information, and those are also part of the association and confidential information rules. There's additional certifications as well. For example, you will be asked to agree that bids in the auction will become a binding obligation under the master SSO supplier agreement, and you will also be required to agree not to assign any rights that you may acquire as a registered bidder as a consequence of a successful Part 2 application. Part 2 application process is online. Again, the look and feel of the Part 2 form for those of you that participated in the CBP under ESP2 is going to be pretty much the same. You will be able to download the inserts as well for the Part 2. Again, there's going to be a tab on the application website for the Part 2 inserts. And fortunately, for the Part 2, the list of inserts is fairly short. Namely, there's one insert that is required of all bidders, that has all the certifications required of the Part 2 application, and there's an additional insert for those bidders that are submitting cash as pre-bid security. That completes the overview of the application process. Now I'll talk a little bit about bidding in the auction. So the auction format is a clock auction, and for these first two auctions, it is a multi-product clock auction. So it's a multi-product design, meaning that the tranches from all the products are procured at once. And when I talk about a product, what I mean is either the 12 months, 24 months, or 36 months. I'm referring to the delivery period, and the product was otherwise described in the first portion of this presentation. So multi-product in that all the products are procured at one time in one auction. It's also a multi-round design, meaning that in a first round, at prices that are announced or suggested by the auction manager, suppliers are submitting bids, and that's stating how many tranches they want to supply at those prices of each of the products. If at the end of the round, when all the bids are tabulated, there's excess supply for a product, meaning there's more tranches bid than are needed for that product, then the price for that product will tick down in the next round. So the price is going to be lower. At those lower prices, suppliers are again asked to state how many tranches they want to supply at those new prices. And again, if there's excess supply, then the price continues to go down. And that process continues until there's a balance between the supply and the demand, the excess, the number of tranches that are bid by suppliers versus the number of tranches that are needed. And while that is going on from one round to the next, suppliers are able to switch their bids from one product to another. So when I talk about the multi-round design, what's a round? Well, there's really three distinct phases to a round. Namely, it starts with a bidding phase, so prices are announced in advance. For round one, those prices are going to be announced only to registered bidders 3 days before the start of the auction, no later than 3 days before the start of the auction. At those prices, the first phase is for suppliers to submit their bids, and that's stating how many tranches they want to supply of each product to the going prices, so the prices announced by the auction manager for that round. The bidding phase has a specific time window that will be pre-announced to bidders. Once it closes, then there's a calculating phase. So during the calculating phase, bidders can no longer submit bids, but bidders don't yet have information about the results of the round, and that's the time at which the auction manager tabulates the results and calculates the prices for the next round. And finally, there's when the calculating phase ends, there's a reporting phase where now information is provided back to bidders, in particular a range of the total excess supply in the auction, as well as the going prices for the next round. So in the next few slides, I'll go in a little bit more detail about bidding in the auction, and I will do that by talking first about round one, and then talking about the rules in round two and subsequent rounds, emphasizing anything that's new that can occur starting in round two or later in the auction. In round one, and really in any round, a bid is always fundamentally simply a number of tranches of each product that the bidder is willing to supply at those prices. So for round one, at the round one price. The constraint on the bidder is what's called the initial eligibility, and we've talked about that already. So a bidder cannot bid in total or across all product more than the initial eligibility, and the initial eligibility is simply determined by the indicative offer from the bidder at the maximum starting price that was submitted in the Part 2 application. And an additional rule to keep in mind and why that indicative offer should be a maximum number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid is that the bidder will not be able to increase the total number of tranches across all products that the bidder can bid throughout the auction. That being said, we already mentioned that bidders can switch tranches from one product, so the 12 months, the 24 months, or from any other two products, and we'll talk about which circumstances precisely switches are allowed. But given that a bidder can switch from one product to another, it's possible to increase the number of tranches bid on a particular product by switching. So a bidder can reallocate its total number of tranches across the three products in such a way that from one round to the next, say, the number of tranches on the 12 months are increasing, but the bidder cannot increase the total number of tranches across all products that are bid throughout the auction. There's a possible reduction in the volume in the auction, by which I mean the sum of the tranche targets across all of the products. If there's insufficient supply for the tranches to ensure competitive bidding, then the auction manager has the discretion to reduce the volume. The criteria that could lead to that reduction will be determined prior to the auction, but are not announced to bidders. And once certain pre-specified criteria are met, then that discretion to reduce the volume will be eliminated later on in the auction. So at the end of round one, once bidding has occurred and once the reports are calculated, then there's information that's provided back to bidders. That includes a range of total excess supply, by which we mean in the entire auction. So that aggregates the excess supply for all the products as well as free eligibility. And I'll touch upon free eligibility later on in the presentation. So the range in this example is 51 to 55 tranches, which means that the actual precise amount of total excess supply is one of those numbers. So the range does include the actual total excess supply. Information that's provided back to bidders also includes next round prices. So at this point, total excess supply range, next round prices, so one price for each of the products, that's provided to all bidders, and all bidders see the same information. In addition, each bidder privately gets to see the results of its own bid. Bidders have no information about other bidders' bids, identities, or eligibilities of other participants in the auction. A bidder only has the results of its very own bid, and then the information that's provided to all bidders, the range of total excess supply, and the prices for the next round. Now, we mentioned that the prices will be going down if there is excess supply. And one of the questions is, how will that reduction in price be determined? And that reduction in price, which is called a decrement, is going to be generally related to the amount of excess supply for the product. So first rule is the price only ticks down if there is excess supply. So if there are more tranches bid, then there are tranches needed. But more than that, the more excess supply there is on a particular product, the greater is the price decrease within certain pre-specified bounds. And similarly, comparing one product to another, if one product has more excess supply than another product, then generally speaking, the price decrement or the decrease in price for the product that has more excess supply will be greater than the decrease in price for a product that has less excess supply. The formulas or tables for determination of those decrements will be provided to bidders in what's called the bidder user manual. And the bidder user manual are provided to bidders that are successful through the Part 2 application. And the bidder user manual has other information, including the ranges of total excess supply that will be used in the auction. So in round two and subsequent rounds, bidders can do different things. So again, fundamentally, a bid is always going to be a number of tranches for each of the products. But compared to the bid that was submitted in round one, a bidder can, of course, leave the bid unchanged. Bidder can always do that. The bidder can withdraw tranches from the auction. That means reducing the total number of tranches bid across all products. Or switch, which means reallocating, so reducing tranches bid for one product but increasing tranches bid in another in the same quantity, or a bidder can do both, withdraw and switch. The constraint is similar to what it was in round one, so a bidder cannot bid more than its eligibility across all products. So what is that? Well, in round two, the eligibility is the number of tranches bid in round one. So the bidder cannot increase the number of tranches bid. And in round three and all subsequent round, the eligibility for that round is going to be whatever the eligibility was in the round before, less any tranches that were withdrawn. So when a tranche is withdrawn from the auction, so there's a reduction, the total number of tranches bid at the going price for the round, then those tranches can never be bid on again. So there's a question, and I alluded to that a little bit by saying there are circumstances where switches are allowed, and we were going to talk about that, where here's the point where we're going to touch on that, which is, can a bidder always decrease the number of tranches bid? And the answer to that is no. For a bidder to be able to decrease the number of tranches bid on a particular product, the price for that product has to have ticked down, decreased from the prior round. So if the price for a product has not ticked down, then a bidder cannot reduce the number of tranches bid for that product, whether that reduction is a withdrawal, so taking out the tranches from the auction altogether, or whether that reduction is to be able to switch tranches from one product to another. And the reason for that is that any bid is a binding obligation to supply at the price at which the bid was made, and if the price for the product does not tick down, then a bidder's offer cannot be rescinded. Bidder could always increase the number of tranches bid on that product, but the bidder cannot decrease the number of tranches bid on that product. So in the next few slides, what I'll be doing is talking about the types of bids that can be placed starting in round two, and when those particular bids are going to require bidders to submit additional information. What I mean by additional information is a bid is fundamentally a number of tranches for each of the products at the price for the round. So that's always true. When is it that additional information is going to be asked over and beyond the number of tranches bid for each of the products? What type of bids are going to require the bidder to submit that additional information? So the first such circumstance is when bidders are withdrawing tranches from the auction, so reducing the total number of tranches bid across all products. So the example we have here, the bidder is keeping the bids the same for the 12-month and the 24-month product, but reducing the number of tranches bid between round one and round two from 8-7 for the 36-month product, and therefore reducing in total the number of tranches bid from 17 to 16. In that case, when the bidder is reducing the total number of tranches bid, then the bidder must provide an exit price for the tranche or tranches that are being withdrawn. What's an exit price? Well, an exit price is a final and best offer for that tranche. So the bidder in our example is willing to bid that eighth tranche of the 36-month product at $70 per megawatt hour, but no longer willing to bid that tranche when the price goes down to $68.50. So the exit price is really the question of what's the price, what's that last price at which the bidder is still willing to bid that tranche. Clearly has to be above $68.50 because the bidder is saying they're not willing to bid the tranche at $68.50, and it can go up to $70, the prior price for that particular product. So the exit price is specified as a final and best offer above the current going price and below or equal to the previous going price. Now, as we'll talk about a little later on, that withdrawal could be accepted or not. When it's not accepted, we say the withdrawal is retained. And if it were retained, so if that tranche was needed to fill the tranche target of the 36-month product, it would be retained at the exit price named by the bidder of 6933 in this example, but whether or not it's retained, the eligibility that's associated with the tranche that is withdrawn is lost. The second circumstance where a bidder can be asked for additional information is when switching, not all the time when switching, so only a particular circumstance when switching, which is when the bidder reduces the tranche's bid on a product and increases the number of tranches bid on two products. So in the example that we have before us, the bidder is reducing the number of tranches bid by two on the 36-month product and reallocating those two tranches, one to the 24-month product and one to the 12-month product. In that case, the bidder will be asked for a switching priority. Why is that? Well, again, it's possible that as prices go down on the 36-month product, we go from a situation where we had excess supply, more tranches bid than needed, to a situation where we don't have enough tranches bid for what is needed. And in that case, some exits may be may be rejected and those withdrawal retained, or switches might be denied to be able to have enough tranches to fill the tranche target for the product. So what the switching priority is for, is for the very special case where for the bidder that we have here, the two tranches that are asked to be switched from the 36-month product to the 12 and 24-month product, we're in the circumstance where there's only one of those tranches that can be allowed. So one of the tranches is needed to fill the tranche target, the other one isn't. And for that particular circumstance, the switch priority tells the auction manager where that tranche that is allowed to switch should go. By putting a switching priority of one on the 12-month product, what it says is, if of those two tranches that are switched from the 36-month product, only one can actually be switched, then it should be switched to the 12-month product. So it's used in those cases where only some of the reductions that are embedded in the switch can be granted. And just a quick note here that when a switch is denied, so if we had that example where one of those switches was denied on the 36-month product, when and if that switch is subsequently outbid, then the bidder will receive one tranche of free eligibility. The last circumstance where a bidder can be asked for additional information is when both switching and withdrawing. So in the example that we have here, there are two reductions. A reduction of one tranche for the 36-month product, a reduction of one tranche for the 24-month product. And at the same time, there's a switch because the bidder is increasing the number of tranches bid on the 12-month product. In that case, we need more information basically because we cannot know just from the bid, just from the number of tranches bid on each of those products, whether the tranche that is switched into the 12-month product is the tranche from the 24-month product or the tranche from the 36-month product. And why does that matter? Well, it matters because whatever tranche is switched, the other tranche is actually being withdrawn from the auction. And if it's being withdrawn from the auction, then the bidder can specify an exit price. So in this circumstance, where there is a reduction in the total number of tranches bid from, again, 17 to 16, one of those tranches is switched, either 24 months or 36 months. The other one is withdrawn. The bidder will be asked to designate the exit or designate the withdrawal, that is, to declare which of those tranches is being withdrawn, so that then the bidder can provide an exit price for that tranche. So that's what changes in terms of bidding in round two, because there are more possible actions by the bidder. There's potentially more information that is required when submitting a bid. In terms of the reporting, the basics of the reporting are the same. All bidders get the range of total excess supply, the prices for the next round, The only thing that is different here is that when getting the results of their own bid, then a bidder may find that some of the tranches that are requested to be withdrawn were actually retained, in which case they were retained at the name exit price, or that tranches that the bidder requested to switch were denied, in which case they are retained at the last price at which they were freely bid, which is the price for the prior round. So the reason that those requests to switch or to withdraw are not necessarily granted is that the auction manager will retain tranches from withdrawals and from switches if that's necessary to fill the tranche target. So if we go from a situation where we have more tranches bid than are needed to a situation where we have not enough tranches bid for the tranches that are needed. And the order in which the tranche target is filled is first with tranches bid at the going price, so that's the lowest price, and then by retaining withdrawals at the named exit price between the current round price and the prior higher round price, and then by denying switches if that's necessary. So the rules for the subsequent round of the auction, round three, round four, et cetera, are the same basically as the rules of round two, and the auction will close when total excess supply is zero and prices are no longer ticking down. Now, bidding on all products will stop at the same time, and all bidders that win tranches for a given product get the same price, and that's the lowest price at which that tranche target for the product is filled, and that could be the going price for the last round. It could be an exit price if withdrawals are retained but no switches are denied, or it could be the price associated with the denied switch, which is the last going price for that product. As we mentioned before, following the close of the auction manager submits a confidential report, and then the commission has a 2 business day window from the conclusion of the auction to review the auction results. That's a bit the theoretical part of the bidding and going through some of the specific auction rules that are in the CBP rules. Now, at a more practical level, just like our application process is online, the bid submission process is online as well. There is specialized auction software for the auction, and there is an opportunity for all bidders to practice, which is the trial auction scheduled for April 22nd, 2015. Now, if you do have difficulty with the auction software, there is a backup bid procedure, and that backup bid procedure is by phone. So that means to phone the auction manager's office, and there are going to be technical assistants that can help you either by resolving your technical issue or by taking the bid on your behalf and entering that bid on your behalf in the auction software. Now, during the bidding phase, you have the opportunity to submit bids. You also have the opportunity to revise your bid. So importantly, the last bid that's submitted and verified by the bidder in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software, that's the bid that counts. And that's true whether you are submitting bids or whether you are submitting a backup bid and a technical assistant is entering that bid on your behalf. So in that case, the bid that would count is the last bid that was entered and verified by a technical assistant in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. It's your responsibility to get the bid on time. You can synchronize the clock of your computers, for example, to the clock of the auction software to make sure that you are on time. There will be a pre-published schedule for the auction so that you know when the bidding windows are occurring. And it's also your responsibility to ascertain whatever system you need to minimize the chances that you will have technical difficulties that could impair your ability to bid in the auction. Similarly, if you are providing a backup bid to us, it's your responsibility to make sure that you have a bid that's complete and that's consistent with the CBP rules. The system requirements for use of the auction software are minimal, a standard PC running either Windows 7 or macOS 10.7. You need a internet connection, of course, and we expect that you would have a primary access through your company's network and potentially also secondary access through an alternative internet service provider. In terms of web browsers, there is a list of web browsers that are supported by the auction software, Internet Explorer 9 or later, as well as the most recent versions of Firefox and Safari. If you do not use those supported web browsers, auction software may not function properly. And there's also backup systems that we would recommend, including having backup laptop and backup internet service connection. And you may also consider having bidding teams in two geographical locations. So there's going to be more information regarding the system requirements and the auction software that will be provided to bidders in the bidder's user manual. Before closing, I'll just talk a little bit about the CBP website. So the CBP website, aepohiocbp.com, you will be able to go there to have access to the documents for the auctions as well as a data room. The navigation for the website is on the left-hand side, and you will be able to navigate to the documents there, and the important dates are provided to you in a news bar on the right-hand side of the website. In particular, importantly, the information tab includes all the documents for the auctions that are coming up, including the CBP rules, the master SSO agreement, information for qualification, credit instruments, associated bidder rules, as well as a glossary for key terms. I mentioned that there's also a tab for a data room. There are changes to the data provided under ESP3. In particular, there's new data that's being provided, including daily PLC and SPLs, and then switching statistics going back to January 1, 2013. The data description has been updated to reflect the new data that is provided, and there will be municipal aggregation data provided closer to the auction. Now, a note if you didn't see that already, some of the hourly energy data series have been revised, so if you did download those energy data series September through November 2014, please go to the website to download the revised file. So that's a quick view of the data room. We continue in the same principle that we had arranged the data room previously in matrices, providing the time and the data and the customer groups to which they apply. So you will see for hourly energy, for example, it broken down in CSP and OPCO rate zones for SSO and for CREST customers, also by customer group as well as aggregate. And the data room is updated on the 20th of each month. Finally, notably, to contact us or to ask a question, you can do that through the website. So there is a link to ask a question that will ask for your name and email address, and then you can send your question. Our basic turnaround time for responding is 2 business days, and then all the responses and the questions are posted as FAQs on the CBP website. You can also contact us by email at aep-cbp@nera.com. So, also on this slide, in addition to our contact information, is the fact that the address for delivery of the pre-bid letter credit, so that P piece of the application process that cannot be submitted online is given to you here in Philadelphia, and it's also part of the application material. And this concludes the presentation portion of this webcast, and you may now ask your questions.
And again, to submit questions to the presenters, please locate the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen and select all panelists in the Send To box. Type in your question and click Send to submit your question. You will again be placed on hold music for a moment while our presenters review any questions, and we will return momentarily.
Good afternoon, everyone. We're back. At this point, there is no further questions from attendees. So again, there was one question that we will provide the question and the response to the website shortly. And in the meantime, we want to thank you for your attendance at today's webcast, and we look forward to your participation in the application process and the auction.
Thank you again for joining us today. This concludes today's web conference. You may now disconnect.